I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello, it's Tuesday the 14th of April. I'm Jules Breach, he's Andy Brassel, and this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily.
First Liverpool, now Tottenham, have done a U-turn on their decision to use the government's job retention scheme during the coronavirus pandemic.
Chairman Daniel Levy said he regrets any concern caused during an anxious time.
These businesses can react. They can furlough their staff. But if a football club dare do it, it's vilified.
Andy, another week in lockdown, another week isolating. I want to know, how many hours of this last week have you spent playing FIFA with your son?
Quite a lot. But what has happened is we've got to the point in lockdown where he's played it enough that he's good. And so you
is he beating you?
Like all the time,
and so can't let that happen.
I'm not even trying to lose. I mean, he's eight, my oldest, and the annoying thing is, he sits there beating you, and he's saying it the whole time, "Oh, I'm so good at this. I'm so good at this."
I was going to say, I bet he's really smug, but I know totally. you're also big basketball fans, aren't you? So you've got a basketball hoop in your garden.
Yeah,
he surely can't beat you at that. You've got a good few feet on him.
Well, he complains every time I make a block, but basically he's super quick, and he's much better than me at that as well. So basically, my life at the moment is being panelled manually and digitally by an 8 year old. So that's pretty much
how. Taught him too well, Andy.
Yeah, I don't think I've taught him enough. I think that's the problem. But what about you, Jules? I mean, you've been making the most of the home environment by evolving to interview Premier League stars whilst wearing your slippers. I mean, that is an achievement.
I know. Isn't it weird? Because, you know, when you normally get prepared to do an interview with a player, whether it be Premier League or whatever level you're doing, there is that element of pressure and you still get nervous every time you're going to go along and meet one of the players or the managers to interview them. And there's quite a long process that goes into it. Whereas for me yesterday, I thought, well, I have to do my hair and makeup because I'm going to be on camera. So I have to get dressed, but I'm not going to put shoes on. And it dawned on me after the interview, I thought, I've just interviewed James Ward-Prowse of Southampton wearing my slippers. And this is completely normal nowadays. But do you know what? It's been really interesting because, like with anything at the moment during this pandemic, everything is taking a lot of time. So it's been a good, what are we in now? The third or fourth week of being in lockdown. And it's only just got to a point now where we're starting to fully broadcast from home. So for me, the podcast, the Football Ramble podcast, has kept me going for the last few weeks, and a little bit of radio work with TalkSport as well. But really, it's this week that more of the TV stuff is kind of getting back on track. So it was really nice to be asked to interview James Ward-Prowse yesterday, and he's doing really well. It was really interesting to have a one-on-one chat with a player from the Premier League to find out exactly how he's coping, how different things have been. I asked him whether Ralph Hasenhüttl had given them a regime and a routine or whether things were more self-motivated. And he said they do have a program that they have to follow. So they're very much still following a routine at Southampton. And I imagine most of the other Premier League clubs are as well. But he's in really good spirits. And I actually said to him, I said, I don't know how you are managing to continue to stay fit, because I don't know about you, Andy, I'm so easily distracted at home. I start doing something and then I look over and I think, oh, that needs a bit of a tidy, or oh, what am I going to cook for dinner tonight? Which is what I find myself constantly thinking about, is what can I cook for the next meal? Because cooking just seems to take a lot of time up, doesn't it? So it's one of the nicer things to do whilst you're kind of trapped in your house. Then you've got a lot of time to think about it, and it takes a lot of time to do. And then you eat it in about 5 minutes. So it's over and done with pretty quickly. But I'm so easily distracted at home. But he said that he's actually found the whole experience actually all right, because he's quite a motivated person. So yeah, but it was really good to chat to him and to sort of get back into that sort of normality of work.
I understand he was in his garden for obviously the remote hit. How big is his garden? I think people will want to know.
Well, he wasn't in the garden. He was sat, which I assume was in his lounge, but he had it was a view of the garden in the background.
Right.
And it looked gorgeous. There were lots of trees. And one of the questions that I asked him was about his set pieces and whether he'd been practicing them in his garden. And he basically said no. He said they've actually not been practicing any actual skills. They've just all been keeping fit. So there's been no free kicks being taken in his garden. But it did look lovely, to be fair. Very, very nice house.
Delightful. And of course, he's at the forefront of something very interesting for the Premier League, along with his Southampton teammates, isn't he, James Ward-Prowse? Because they were the first club to come out and announce, the first Premier League club, sorry, to come out and announce a group pay cut. Now, I assume he had a little something to say on that, but players have received a lot of stick, actually, going back probably about a week and a half ago now. But players have taken the narrative back into their own hands, haven't they, with this Players Together initiative, where it's a group of Premier League players led by Jordan Henderson, and they had what they called in their statement extensive conversations between a huge number of players from all Premier League clubs. And they're partnered with NHS Charities Together to generate and distribute funds, as they put it, quickly and efficiently. Now, I think this is the thing that's been overlooked when people said players were slow to react. And it's something that I heard, I might have mentioned last week, actually, Jose Font talking about on a program I was on a while back, about you know, when you're talking about people want to see action quickly, maybe people in the public want to see action quickly. Certainly headline grabbing politicians seem to want to see action quickly. But the fact is, if you're asking a team as a whole, a squad of players as a whole, to take a pay cut, is necessarily one like 20% pay cut or 30% pay cut or whatever people deem is appropriate or fair, reasonable for the whole squad? Because there'll be some people in the squad who are earning a lot more than other people in the squad, and some people who can afford it more than others. And of course, the players were talking, particularly after this, about they were worried that if they were forced to take a pay cut, that would also cut their tax, so in a way penalise the NHS. But this is a really, really interesting initiative, I think, not just because Jordan Henderson's come out of it brilliantly. I mean, Jordan Henderson, I've interviewed him a couple of times, and he's always extremely impressive, really engaging, really grounded, and you're really feeling that at the moment, I think. And I think the thing is, that I think is most impressive is not just that the players are willing to help, that's great, but the sense that they've got some sort of power of attorney over this, and that rather than being told what to do, which is sometimes what we assume of Premier League footballers, they've actually come up with this idea and worked on it collaboratively. And I think that's what makes it like such a potential turning point in maybe the way, not just the footballers are, but the way that we perceive footballers.
It was the perfect response, wasn't it, Andy? Because off the back of, we talked about it last week on Jules and Andy, didn't we, as you mentioned there, and one of the things we both agreed on is that just because it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean it's not going to eventually happen. And it was almost hours after the podcast that this Players Together initiative was announced. And I think it's brilliant. As you say, this is the players themselves choosing to come together, led by Jordan Henderson, and the initiative is now going to be managed by a few different Premier League captains in Jordan Henderson, Harry Maguire, Troy Deeney and Mark Noble. They're the ones that are going to be managing how this all works and how the funds are distributed, as you mentioned already, to the NHS charities. And this is the players deciding to do something themselves. This wasn't the clubs telling them to do something. This was them as people saying, let's do what we can do to help the people who need it the most right now. And that is the NHS frontline. And I think that it's a really interesting thought process. The question you asked a minute ago, Andy, is, are we entering an era where players are more socially aware and responsible? And I think the answer is yes. And I think that part of that is down to social media pressure. I think a lot of that is down to them actually knowing that they can make a difference. The money is so big in football now that these players know that they can make such a difference by donating something, that they've all decided collectively to come together and lead this campaign. And then there are so many players that are involved in it. It's such a powerful message. And I think it really sets an example, doesn't it? And hopefully will inspire others to perhaps do the same. And I think that's one of the things that with football is so important. These players are role models. They are role models to so many people, despite the fact that right now so many people are saying footballers aren't heroes, and the footballers themselves are saying we aren't heroes, it's the NHS that are the heroes. But these players are idols for so many people. So if they do something as big as this, as and it sends out such a strong message, that will only inspire other people to do the same.
I can't sit here and take a whole lot of credit for it. It was certainly Jordan who came up with the initiative, the idea, and then he pitched it to the rest of the captains in the Premier League, and he took the initiative upon himself to pitch the idea to the rest of the lads, and it was a no-brainer for us, of course.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's, I'd say social media pressure, actually, but I think social media is a huge part of it, because going back to what we were saying before about them having a power of attorney rather than, you know, you do think with organising stuff with Premier League players, whether it be interviews, access, quotes, like from our working perspective, to the way they connect with supporters. Social media has changed that, hasn't it? Because it has, as you say, provided a direct line between the players and the public without anything in between. And I think you've seen Raheem Sterling is a really good example of that. Someone who's seen that opportunity, and he's someone who's stripped away all the PR and fluff and said, this is who I am. These are my opinions. These are the things that I think are wrong in society. And these are the things I want to address. And these are the people that I want to help. And these are people that I can help without needing to go through several filters to do that. And I think that's really interesting. The bit where in this Players Together statement, they want to get the money to the right place quickly and efficiently. I don't know if it's fair to say they don't trust the clubs to do it, although I'm sure in some cases the players don't trust the clubs to do it. The idea that they're thinking, okay, well, let's actually do something, but not something we're not just going to look like we're doing something good. We're actually going to do something that's good and effectively good. And I think that's a really, really important thing. The idea is, as you say, the players realizing they have this power, but rather than saying, we'll put our name to something, thinking, and Jordan Henderson is the key figure in this, I think you have to say. Someone saying, actually, we're going to do something about it. We're not just going to say, we pledge, we offer, we pledge our support to. They're saying, right, this is something that needs to be done now. And we're going to do it. Let's do it.
I also don't think, as you just said there, Andy, that it's necessarily about the fact they don't trust the clubs. This is more about the timing and the quickness that they can get the money directly to these charities. The fact that they've set up this initiative themselves means they have control over it. So they can say, right, we want to all donate this amount of money. It's going to go straight to those charities. Those charities can then distribute it to the individual charities themselves within the NHS group. Now, the difference between that and perhaps doing it through the club, I imagine, is a logistical thing, because I don't have any idea how the business works, but I imagine that if each player from each club said, I want to donate X amount of money from this wage and then the next month's one to this charity, it would just be a logistical nightmare. And I imagine that the timing of that would be probably a bigger issue as well. Whereas with Players Together, this allows the money to get there quicker in a more direct way, and that they've got more control over that as well.
Yeah, and that is super important. But I think we should probably bring in Tottenham here as well, because we've talked about Liverpool and them reversing the decision to furlough non-playing staff. And now Tottenham, after a slightly longer gap, have done the same. And it was interesting the way that they brought it out. We'll come to that in a minute. But it was interesting the way that they brought the news out at the same time as they put forward, right, we want to get on with helping the community and helping the NHS. And the fact that they've given away part of the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium as working premises for NHS North Middlesex, which I think was a great follow-up to that, and a really good thing that they're doing. Of course, they're not the only club that are doing that. I believe Manchester City are giving away part of the Etihad Stadium for NHS and local groups to help out and distribute from that. But the reversal of the Tottenham decision is really interesting, because it feels as if there are so few other situations in which public pressure would actually work. And we have to say, as Jack Pitbrook, who covers Spurs for The Athletic, has pointed out, the Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust has done an incredible job in keeping this on the boil. And again, with what we saw with, and we mentioned it last week, with the Spirit of Shankly group at Liverpool, to see supporters taking this in their hands and realizing, and we talked about it last week, supporters realizing that they're making a difference. You know, this is the second such high profile, very high profile, elite level instance of that. Is something changing, the relationship between fans and their clubs, because this is such an unusual situation? I mean, I saw earlier in the week in Germany, Dieter Hecking, the coach of Hamburg, saying, you know, if there's something good that's going to come out of the coronavirus crisis, it's that the relationship between football and the various stakeholders has to change durably, not just now for a temporary period, but durably. And I thought it was really interesting to hear like a figurehead of a main club come out and say that, because that's what we're seeing here in England. And I think when we're talking about the view of footballers changing, our view of footballers changing, fans' view of footballers changing, and footballers' view of what they are capable of doing themselves changing, I really believe this could be an absolute turning point, that something could change here. You know, we expect something different from them. They expect something different from themselves. And now with the Tottenham thing, fans are expecting something from clubs, and clubs are recognising what they're saying. I mean, do you think this is something that could be durable?
I do, actually. And I think that the Tottenham Supporters Trust have said that themselves, haven't they? They, after this decision was reversed by the club, they actually said themselves that this shows how much power the fans have. And that's how it should be, because it's the fans that really make a club live. It's the fans that keep a club alive. It's not the owners. It's not anyone else. It is all about the fans. And the Tottenham Supporters Trust, right from the start, had said that it wasn't the right decision to furlough the non-playing staff and that they shouldn't be doing it. And they continued to plead and beg, please do the right thing, Tottenham. And the club finally listened, and rightly so. But well done to the club for listening to them. Like we said last week with Liverpool as well, it's fair play to the clubs for actually sitting there listening to the big supporter groups of their club and saying, actually, right, this has clearly embarrassed the fans. This hasn't sat well with the fans. So therefore, we need to do the right thing. And I think that that pressure from the fans to actually achieve something at their club when they feel it isn't right has been proven in this situation. And I think that they can definitely take that forward for future things that happen. So if they're not happy with potentially ticket prices, for example, then that's something that they should definitely stand up and fight for.
Look, I want to bring in a really interesting email we've had at this point from Spencer Dahl. Thanks for writing in, Spencer. He said at the top, sorry in advance for a bit of a long email, but trusting your combined journalistic expertise to cut through the boring part for the listeners. But he does make a really interesting counterpoint to this, actually. He said, the issue I'm curious to hear your thoughts on is how football clubs are supposed to balance, one, the need to operate as a sustainable business in a competitive market, with two, their role as the centrepiece of a community. And he was talking about the furloughing, and he says, however, it got me wondering about why retail businesses are deemed by the public as being allowed to participate, in inverted commas, which are also staring at multiple months making little to no revenue and have higher overhead costs to manage, whereas football clubs are not. And he said, how far down the football ladder do you have to be until being, again, in inverted commas, allowed to use this program? And I think there are parallels here with the sensitivity around clubs raising ticket prices. I assume most fans would agree that match day tickets should cost something, and so that is implicitly pricing out some people from attending a match. Where then is the acceptable level of price discrimination? How do you draw a line at £10 or £20 being fair, whereas £50 or £100 being so high? Sorry again for the long email, and thanks so much for all the work you do on the show. Thanks,
Bravo, for cutting that down, Andy. You did very well there.
Honestly, I really did cut it down. it's a really interesting point that Spencer makes. I suppose most people would instinctively say you can't hold football clubs to the rules of other businesses. And that is why football is such a bizarre and unique business in a way, because it is money-wise and revenue-wise at the level of a lot of elite businesses, but you can't quite hold it to the same rules. And football clubs have sometimes taken advantage of that. You know, they know that there's something beyond average customer loyalty. You know, people are not going to ditch their club if they feel that ticket prices are too high or whatever. They'll find a way, whether it's whacking it on credit cards at the start of the season and paying off their season ticket for the rest of the season, whether it's simply paying TV subscriptions and watching it at home, which is the only possible way for some people. But I think the bit about the ticket prices is interesting, because it's something we've heard Uli Hoeneß talk about when he was still president of Bayern Munich. the fact that because of the TV money, the ability to offer at least some cheap tickets, it's such a minor loss for the club. It's a no-brainer to him. And that's interesting to me. A club like Bayern, which is seen as decidedly corporate, which is seen as, you know, a corporate monster by a lot of other German football fans, and I guess some other fans in Europe as well, saying, come on, it's logic. You know, we need atmosphere. We need to fill the stadium. And I think actually, when we go back to Spencer's original point about the need, one, the need to operate as a sustainable business, and two, their role as the centerpiece in a community, they need two for one to work. And that is the point I think that we've made again and again on here. And something that, especially in these times, is something that I think is worth being aware of.
Yeah, and I think that comparison that Spencer made between the retail industry and the football industry is an interesting one to make. But as you pointed out, Andy, football is treated in such a different way. And I think part of that is because of how much the players get paid. It's out there in the open. People know how much the money there is in football. So that definitely makes a difference. And I think because of the power and the kind of social responsibility that a lot of these players have, I think that's also another reason why perhaps they were put under a bit of pressure, and that, you know, people are calling for them to take wage deferrals and all that kind of stuff. But I think going back to my interview with James Ward-Prowse yesterday and speaking to him about what Southampton are doing, I asked him how proud he was that Southampton were the first club to actually announce that the players, the coach, all of his coaching staff, Ralf Hasenhüttl's coaching staff, as well as the board of directors, were all going to take, they're going to take wage deferrals for the next 3 months up until the end of June, at least for now. And that's until it will be reviewed. I asked him how proud he was that Southampton were leading the way with this. And it was really interesting what he said, because he said it's not actually about them being the first. He said it's just about us setting an example and actually doing what we think is right. It's not really about being the first club to do something or the fact that we've done. It's actually just doing it and showing that we want to actually help the community. We want to help our club be sustainable for the future. And I think that that's really important. And it goes back to what we were saying about player power as well, because they can be so powerful at their football clubs.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
You're listening to Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily. Now, let's get to some of your correspondence. As always, we love hearing from you, and loads of you have been getting in touch by emailing us, julesandandy@footballrambledaily.com, and on the Twitter as well, at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, at Football Ramble. Let's start with some hard-hitting football journalism, Andy, because this is a question that has been burning in the mailbox for the last 7 days. It's from Sean Hubb, and he's asking what our favourite pot noodle flavour is. Now, can I just begin by saying I had no idea there were this many pot noodle flavours. I'm currently on the pot noodle website. There are so many. I thought there was about 5 or 6. There are tons.
You're kidding. Really?
There's loads. Shall I run you through a few of them?
Yeah, please.
We've got pot noodle korma, pot noodle sweet and sour, pot noodle original curry, pot noodle jerk chicken, pot noodle chow mein, pot noodle king Bombay bad boy, pot noodle king chow mein. Oh, that's twice. I've repeated that one. Beef and tomato, chicken and mushroom, the classic, king pulled pork, sticky rib, Thai green curry. You got another beef and tomato special. And I think that's it. I think these are just repeats now. But yeah, tons of them.
Have you tried the jerk one yet?
I haven't tried the jerk one, and I feel like I should with my Jamaican roots. But yeah. I'm yet to try it. I don't reckon it's gonna be a patch on any Jamaican cooking. So I don't know. I'm a bit reluctant. Why have you? Is it any good?
No. In fact, the last pot noodle I had, it wasn't an official pot noodle, but Pete had
a knockoff version.
Well. Pete, I thought it was a step up because Pete Donaldson was gifted what can only be described as the largest box of pot noodle type items that you've ever seen.
Wait. You need to explain. Why has Pete been given a large box of pot noodle items?
Well, as we know, Pete Donaldson is big in Japan. So he was sent over this ginormous box of what I was told was a step up from pot noodles, and John, our leader, said, just, you know, help yourself to a couple, take a couple home. They're meant to be better than pot noodles. They were disgusting. They were absolutely awful. And you know, I used to eat pot noodles now and then as a teenager. I didn't realize that anything was available apart from chicken and mushroom. But also, I associate pot noodles with one of my most uncomfortable football injuries, because I remember, like, we used to have football on Wednesdays at school, and so I really wanted to make it in, even though I was under the weather one Wednesday. I really wanted to make it in to play, and so I was a bit late. I picked up my boots and my kit, put them in my bag, and I ate a pot noodle on the bus. I know it sounds disgusting. It is disgusting. But anyway, once I'd finished, I just threw the fork in my bag, and that isn't the really disgusting bit. Wait for it. And so, of course, I threw the empty pot in the bin as I got off the bus. So I was in a bit of a rush, got into the changing room, said, I'm here, let's go, got my kit on, put on my left boot, then put on my right boot, and the fork had gone in the right boot, and it just started... It just like prodded me right in the middle of the foot.
I wasn't expecting you to say that. I thought you were going to say there was some like leftover noodle soup in the shoe and you had a soggy sock or something. I wasn't expecting that.
So there we go. Now we know why Premier League footballers don't eat pot noodles.
Oh, do you know what? I can't remember the last time I had a chicken and mushroom pot noodle, but it is the only flavour I've ever tried. So therefore the answer to your question, Sean, is chicken and mushroom. But it just reminds me of being really hungover, because it's the sort of thing that when you're hungover, you've had a large night, you just think, I can't be asked to cook, I can't be bothered to make an effort except for a bacon sarnie first thing in the morning, because that's essential. But later on in the day, you know, when the 3 p.m. sort of hangover hits you,
yes,
you go into the cupboard and you think, what's easy? I know, I'll boil the kettle and I'll make myself a pot noodle. That is that is when a pot noodle comes in handy, and that is probably the last time I had one, probably about a year ago. So it's been a while, but I'm not saying that's the last time I was hungover. I've been hungover since then, but not had a pot noodle to hand. Do you know what? I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of a pot noodle. Why not? Go for it. If there's one there, only takes, what, 3 minutes to make. Can't go wrong.
Yeah, you see, better food than that takes 3 minutes to make. But anyway, fair. You know, we've got a culinary flavour to our inbox this week. David Moss has written in and said, is a Kit Kat a chocolate bar or a biscuit?
I mean, we're going hard on the questions this week, aren't we? This is an easy one for me. Again, it's definitely a chocolate bar, David. Don't be ridiculous. It's not a biscuit.
I'm sure you'll all have big opinions on that anyway. So it's at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com.
Don't get it wrong, Andy.
I won't get it wrong. I'd never get it wrong. we've got some other proper questions as well. This is an interesting one from Mark Clemson. Can you see the Europa League and Champions League remaining fixtures being played in like a knockout 3 to 4 week period after all domestic leagues are finished? Now, this is really interesting because, of course, we had the idea floated as a sort of a super weekend for the Champions League in Istanbul, where you play both semi-finals and then the winners would stay on to play the final, which, if that was logistically possible, I think would be like a really interesting way of doing it. You know, I think people are going to accept something that's not quite what we expected at the start of the season because of the extraordinary situation if and when football restarts for the 19-20 fixtures. I think that the interesting bit of this, it was something that Lucas Hernandez, the Bayern and France defender, talked about in an interview with L'Equipe a couple of days ago. It was a really, really good interview. And again, he was talking, as you were saying earlier, Jules, about the health professionals are the heroes, not us. And that has always been the case. And it was, again, great to hear a footballer come out with that. But I wanted to touch on what the lads on the Ramble were saying yesterday about, maybe Spurs were a bit annoyed at Harry Kane breaking cover and talking about what he thought might or should happen with the season going forward. Now, Lucas Hernandez said, well, I don't see how the Champions League can finish. For me, it must be over because, of course, it's not just the fact that, we don't know when anything's going to be able to restart at the moment, but that countries are inevitably going to have to start at different times because the spread is going at different paces. And of course, the effects, as we said before, the emotional effects are felt differently in different countries, partly dependent on how hard they've been hit or partly dependent on how particular regions have been hit. And that point about international travel is a very good one. I think it's something that's difficult. But as Mark says, the idea about playing them after all domestic leagues are finished, maybe seems a little bit more feasible.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point that Mark makes there because, as you just mentioned, Andy, this is going at a different rate in every country, and every country will follow different guidelines based on when they have their peak of the virus and when that all kind of starts to slow down. So I know only yesterday it was announced that France were going to be in lockdown until at least May the 11th. Mm. That means that there can be no sign of football coming back and the players going back into training until quite some time after that. Whereas I know there's been a few ideas floated around in the UK. How true they are, I'm not sure, but there has been discussion of the players potentially going back into training middle of May if they were to go ahead with this idea that the Premier League would be played out in June and July in that kind of behind closed doors tournament style atmosphere.
Well, there was a discussion that it could be Wembley, wasn't there? I think I was in the Times today, I think.
Yes, exactly. Now, if that were to be the case, as you say, that doesn't really make a difference for what happens in the other countries because every country is going to do things differently. And for the Europa League and the Champions League to be played out, I think it has to be done fairly. I think all domestic leagues have to be finished, as Mark says. But then this poses another logistical problem. The Euros has now been moved to 2021 and the qualification for the Euros still hasn't been finished. So how do they decide what's more important and where does that then fit in? Because ordinarily, the first international break of the season happens around September time. So that looks as though that could potentially be where those qualifications for the Euros takes place in that period of time. But really, that's probably where you'd maybe slot in the Europa League and Champions League finals based on this timeline that we're working on if we go based on the June and July Premier League season finishing, if that makes sense. So it's very interesting to try and think about how everything slots in whatever way we look at it, things are going to be moved. It's not going to be what we're expecting now. And I think this is going to be something that just develops over time and that changes as and when we get more and more information.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jules. Having said that, I am all in on the Final Four concept. Definitely like
that.
Yeah,
I quite like that. It's a nice idea, isn't it? Another tweet here, Andy, from Michael DeLuca. He says, how important is it for clubs to have their senior players providing support and leadership to the younger players coming through during this unprecedented period of isolation? It's a really good question as well, Michael. Thanks for sending it in. And I think we've seen that senior players at clubs, like with the Players Together initiative, Jordan Henderson leading the way with that, and other club captains, as we mentioned earlier, getting involved. And I think those senior players will be so important right now to those in the academy and those younger players in the squad as well, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely. And Michael pointed out as well that Adam Bate wrote a great piece for Sky on psychology in football, which I think sort of got the cogs working in his mind to send that in the first place. I mean, I tend to think senior players, and you know, going back to what we were talking about, the view of players and particularly Premier League players at the beginning, I think generally they don't need to be told. I think that they are good in terms of mentorship roles as well as they are in terms of giving their times for local charities and good causes. This is different, of course, because both aspects of what especially senior players are meant to be doing is something that the public are demanding to see. They want to see the working for once, especially because of the situation we're in, especially because there's no football on. So I think both of those things are important. But, you know, to suggest that players don't usually take up these roles, I don't think is particularly fair on them, although obviously anything more they can do in that direction is a positive thing. And talking about what we were talking about earlier, Jules, there's a really interesting email from Simon Feeney here. He said, hi, Jules and Andy. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. I'm a Stoke fan now living in London, and I couldn't help noticing when you were talking about other clubs taking the furlough option that Manchester United got a special mention for saying that they would be paying all of their staff's wages. And while this is, of course, commendable, I would just like to give a shout out to my club Stoke. With football being suspended on 19th of March, one day later on 20th of March, before any talk of government support packages was mentioned, Stoke City announced that all staff would be paid for the next 5 months. In addition to this, the owners, the Coates family, have ensured that all of their staff, that their jobs are also secure until at least the end of August. And it continues in this vein, and sorry for rambling on, but I'm just extremely proud that in our hour of need, the Coates family and football club have committed to supporting its staff and wanted to give them a shout out. Yeah, well done to them.
Yeah, well done to them. Definitely. It's so nice, really, isn't it? Because one of the things you mentioned earlier, Andy, is kind of finding a positive in this coronavirus pandemic, because everyone's going to go through a bit of a roller coaster of emotions, because you have some days where you think, actually, it's not too bad staying indoors and spending time with the family and getting things done that I've not been able to do before. And then other days it really hits you and you think, oh, this is so frustrating. I just want normality back. And I think that it's really important to kind of find little positives. And I think there will be a lot of positives that come out of this if people just kind of focus in on them and try and think of what you can do with this situation and how you can make it work for you and how you can make it better. And I think that we're seeing a lot of football clubs doing really good things. So well done to Stoke for doing that. And just a final tweet just to round things off. This one's from Jake Ward, who has tweeted us saying, what is the first thing you're both excited for at the first game back? Andy, I'll go to you first on this one.
Well, I don't know where it's going to be. So depending on where the first game back is going to be, either walking into AFC Wimbledon's new stadium at Plough Lane, nice, which would be a pretty good one, or halftime currywurst at Dortmund. It's a bit of a tradition.
All about the food, isn't it?
One or the other, yeah.
For me, I think it's likely that the first game back for me will likely be for work reasons. And one of the things I love the most about working at football matches, and it's such a privilege to do it, and it's just amazing to be there and to see how the whole day unfolds. And I think one of the things that I'm going to enjoy the most, and this is when football gets back to proper normality, not behind closed doors, this is proper normality, I can't wait to get to a stadium, and obviously when you're working, you get there long before any of the fans get there, and seeing that empty stadium and its kind of peaceful serenity, and then slowly the media filling in, the press officers arriving, seeing the stewards setting everything up and standing around, getting their kind of, you know, they get told what where they need to be for the day, and they're getting all their kind of orders for the day. And then you see all of the staff sort of starting to get all the food ready in the stands and whatnot. And then slowly but surely, all those fans trickling in and finding their seats, and you start seeing the flags and you start seeing the shirts and the scarves. I cannot wait to be at a game and to just see all of that happen again and to see a stadium full. It's just going to be an amazing thing.
Yeah, that'll be pretty fantastic. You know what? I'm going to hit us with one more bonus tweet before
we go. Is it a food related one?
Look, you can send in more for next week. @JulesReach, @AndyBrassel, JulesAndy @footballrambledaily.com. Josh Wright has asked, if you could play football with any player past or present, who would be your number one choice?
Oh, okay. Do you know what? So if you haven't listened to my Fantasy Five-a-Side that I did with Jim Campbell yet, we had such fun recording it. I've probably given away a lot in that. If you haven't listened to it yet, then do give it a listen. But one of the players who I desperately wanted to get into that five-a-side who didn't quite make it in was Xavi Alonso. He is just a magic player. And I think if I could play with anyone, it would be him. He's a sort of player that makes everything simple and easy for everyone else around him, because he was just unbelievable. He's one of my favourite players of all time, and he didn't quite make it into my fantasy five-a-side, so I'm going to let him make it into this answer today.
And he could make the ball land on your foot from like 50 yards away as well. I mean, yeah,
even my foot, and I'm terrible. So yeah, that's why I'd have to play with someone as good as him.
Have you ever seen that video of when he was at Bayern, Xabi Alonso and Arturo Vidal on a pre-season tour of America, the two of them playing against like 58-year-old kids? It's amazing.
I need to watch that.
It's really amazing because, of course, Xabi Alonso can score from the halfway line. Yeah. And Arturo Vidal has got absolutely no problem putting in reducers on like little kids either. So it's a really great combination. I would go for Carles Puyol, of former Barcelona great, as my player to be my number one choice, because I'm really slow, so I need someone who's really athletic with a lot of pace. And also, I don't defend either. So right. I think he'd
one dimensional Andy
covered. You could say that.
It's better than me.
Goals, they're what football's all about. Come on.
That is so true. Well, thank you everyone for getting in touch. Keep your questions coming in. We'll be back same time, same place next week. But before we go, Andy, we've got something else ready for the guys this week as well, haven't we?
Yeah, we have, because over on our Patreon, we're compiling our ultimate Premier League 11 from the 21st century. The first episode's available now. It's me, Jim and Marcus choosing goalkeeper, defence and the manager. And so it's going to be Jules, Pete and Luke choosing the midfield and the front line. Goodness knows what that's going to be like, quite frankly.
It's a difficult choice, I'm not going to lie. It's a difficult choice. I tried my best to get Glenn Murray in, but no one was having it.
Well, anyway, it was loads of fun making it, and hopefully you'll have loads of fun listening to it. That episode with me, Jim Campbell and Marcus Speller is up now. If you head to patreon.com/footballrambledaily, you can sign up and listen now. There's loads of other brilliant stuff on there too. You can have a bit of mild bants with us on the Discord as well, which is an added bonus, I'm sure.
Yes, lovely stuff. Make sure you do that. And also, while you're there, don't forget to subscribe to Football Ramble on your favourite podcast site. And we'll see you same time, same place next week. Have a good one, Andy.
See you next week.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.